Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, Vatican Radio. Following the death of Blessed John XXIII on the 3rd of June 1963, the choice of his successor to the See of Peter fell on Cardinal Giovanni Battista Montini. Elected by the cardinals in conclave on the 21st of June of that same year, his was the last coronation of a Roman pontiff in the history of the Catholic Church. It took place on the 30th of June 1963. Over the years, I've collected the testimonies of some of those who lived through that era, many of whom personally knew Paul VI or anyway witnessed events connected to his pontificate, including the coronation itself. In a few moments, I'll also be bringing you a selection of recordings of Paul VI's voice from our very own Vatican Radio archives.
Coronis ornatam, et scias te esse patrem principum et regum.
Well, the coronation of Pope Paul VI was done with the full splendor of the medieval ceremony in front of St. Peter's, I remember. It was a very hot day, and that was the last time there was absolutely everything there. And another remarkable figure was
on June the 30th, 1963, Winston Churchill's first cousin, Sir John Leslie, whose father was supernumerary chamberlain to Pius XI, was present in St. Peter's Square for Paul VI's coronation. It was the last time a pope was ever to be crowned.
I think the Queen of Saxony had the privilege of wearing white with the pope, and ladies wore long dresses with black veils and tiaras. The Roman nobility then had front seats. But as soon as Pope Paul came in, so many things were done away with.
We witnessed the industry, the imagination, and the dedication which have transformed the vast riches of your natural resources into a very high standard of living for your citizens.
2 days after his enthronement, Paul VI met with America's first Catholic president, John Fitzgerald Kennedy.
Has not forgotten the high ideals of its first beginnings, nor neglected the poorer.
While the world the young American president represented was modern, vital, and projected into the 21st century, it clashed with the pomp and ceremony of a Vatican still deeply anchored in the past. The new pope was determined to change that. He was an intellectual and very aware it was time to bring the church closer to the modern world. His attempts to do so would not always be understood.
We thought he was a bit austere and puritanical in a kind of way, but efficient. But he abolished so many things, the Palatine Guard, the Noble Guard, and countless things in the church. I remember Monsignor Hemick saying he's abolishing everything. And he steered the church through a very difficult time in a magnificent manner, you might say.
When Paul VI decided someday to reduce or almost suppress the papal court and its military asset.
The late Count Carlo Cardelli belonged to the papal court abolished by Paul VI.
And some of the unnecessary pageantry. He also suppressed the annual audience for the Roman families, together with the special tribune at the ceremonies. In an unforgettable audience, January 64, he said that now that the Pope was no more a temporal sovereign and that the Church was more and more universal, some of the past privileges could not be maintained. Not forgetting all the past services and merits of our families, the Church had now nothing more to offer. An unfortunate expression. I heard an aged lady near me whisper, "But Holy Father, we have only given." In our families, we had always been taught not to criticize the Holy Father or to express preferences for one or another pope. he was the vicar of Christ, his representative. But the suppression of this privilege, a word that seemed to frighten the Pope, was a hard blow. After that, there is a feeling that our families ceased to be as a group, having lost this personal link with the Holy Father. Besides, since then, the choice and the quality of the papal court has lost a great deal. And now people go there in blue jeans and as they like. Before, we were very strict and we had to go in full dress.
And of course, in those days, the Pope was carried on his sedia justitoria, the chair which allowed him to be viewed by the people in the crowd. In one way, perhaps it was better.
On September the 29th, 1963, a young priest named John Foley, later to become Cardinal Foley and who recently passed away, was in St. Peter's Basilica reporting on the opening ceremony of the second session of the Second Vatican Council.
See him clearly, and the silver trumpets from the back window of St. Peter's, way up high, would play the papal hymn as the Pope was carried up the middle aisle. I must say, with the stands that were erected for the Second Vatican Council, with individual seats, assigned seats for each cardinal and bishop and patriarch, it was a magnificent sight. All of the cardinals and bishops would be dressed in copes and mitres, and the Eastern Rite bishops in crowns. So you can imagine what that looked like in a procession like that, about 2,000 bishops. I would think that it's like may never be seen again, because the number of bishops has grown so greatly and the expense of such events would have grown greatly. And as I said, it was very easy to see the Holy Father in that situation. In those days, of course, also, the Pope wore a crown, a tiara, the triple crown.
Veni Creator Spiritus.
A triple crown, Paul VI felt, was no longer in keeping with the times. He was soon to give it away, cancelling yet another of the Catholic Church's centuries-old traditions. The late Carmelite father, Redemptus Fallerbeck, recalled the enormous impact this clamorous gesture had on public opinion.
I remember very well. It was a tense moment because, of course, this was centuries of tradition. And many of the more traditional-minded people didn't like it. Even, I think, some of the people who had contributed that tiara to him, I think they were the people of Milan, they were kind of hurt that he would give away something that they sacrificed for to give. But his gesture really was in a different direction. He wanted to divest the papacy of some of those regal trappings, as he did by reforming the guards around him and the nobility around him. So it was really a much broader gesture than just the tiara.
I was with him so often, day after day, sometimes more than once a day, certainly every week for a number of occasions. And I was with him. I was able to see and admire the great zeal, the great charity with which he was animated, and also to see the way that he led the church. Pope Paul made
in the 1970s, Cardinal Justin Regali was a young priest serving as a translator in English to Pope Paul VI. The nature of his work enabled him to follow firsthand the issues and decisions that were close to Papa Montini's heart.
Decisions to carry out the Second Vatican Council. He made the great decision of Humanae Vitae. He made all kinds of other pastoral decisions. I was witness to them day after day. Paul VI certainly was animated by a great compassion. He tried to put all factors together. He tried to look at everything so that his decision would indeed be wise and prudent. And I believe that he certainly succeeded. Above all, though, he was a man of great hope, great compassion, and certainly had a wonderful love for the church and a wonderful love for the individuals in the church.
The many churches that dot the American countryside and despise reaching high over the cities are indicative of the spiritual awareness and conviction of your people.
Pope Paul VI came in October of 1965 to New York. It was the first visit of a pope to the United Nations, and it was a very historic occasion. And Pope Paul made, in French, an impassioned plea for peace. Jamais la guerre, jamais plus la guerre. Never war, no more war. And it was stirring. You could see that the people there were deeply touched. I think that even some of the people from communist states felt the power of what he was saying.
Jamais plus la guerre, jamais plus la guerre. C'est la paix qui doit garder le destin des peuples.
Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.